From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of May 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, Incorporated, out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And TGM's Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois, will join us to look at the cash grain market. In agricultural news, the Commerce Department says the U.S. trade deficit has narrowed for the second month in a row. At the same time, China is reporting its manufacturing sector has slowed. And on a totally unrelated subject, a new federal report is blaming a series of problems for the disappearance of honeybees each winter in the United States. Dave Dickey will be along with these and other stories shortly. At the end of the half hour, we'll try to take a look at the weather forecast with Pete Levitt, though he may be out of the office again this afternoon. But still, it all happens during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
In Chicago for a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat was up 8.25 cents. Settlement price there at $7.18 3/4 for the May. July at $7.28 1/2, up 7.5 cents. Kansas City hard red finished at $7.90 3/4 in the July. That's 8.5 cents higher. Corn pit was higher as well. May futures in the there in Chicago at $6.97 1/2. Settlement price up 15 3/4. July corn at $6.62, up 15 1/4. September at $5.83 3/4, up 10 3/4. And December corn at $5.59, 8.5 cents higher. March contract at $5.69, up 8 cents. And May corn at $5.76 3/4, 7 3/4 cents higher. May soybeans today, $14.41, up 3.5 cents, but the rest of them were lower. July at $13.72 1/4, a settlement down 3/4. August at $13.18 1/4, down a penny. September soybeans 2.5 lower at $12.47 1/2. November at $12.04, down 5 1/4. And next year's January beans, $12.11 3/4, down 5 1/4. Bean meal at $4.18.60, up $3. Bean oil finished 22 cents lower at $48.42. Live cattle futures finished the nearby August at 123.87 1/2, up 77 1/2. August feeders at 149.65, up 92 1/2. And June lean hogs, $92.82 1/2, down 12 1/2 cents. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, June contract, $93.97 a barrel, $2.94 higher. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price up 5 4/10. That's a $2.77 3/10 a gallon. And the ethanol at $2.71 3/10 a cent, up 11 4/10. The RBOB gasoline to ethanol spread now stands at 25 3/10 of a cent. Natural gas at $4.04 8/10 a cent, down 27 8/10 of a cent. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.85 2/10 of a cent per gallon, up 6 3/10 of a cent. Gold futures at $1,467.60 a troy ounce, up $21.40. And the U.S. dollar at 82.22. That's up 0.73 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A 50% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a high of 78. Southeast winds at 7 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, the showers and thunderstorms will continue. A low of 56 degrees. The winds will come out of the north, northeast this evening at 6 miles an hour. And then turn to the southeast after midnight. Chance of precipitation this evening set at 60%. Rain is likely tomorrow, followed by a thunderstorm or two. Cloudy and 67. East-northwest winds at 6 to 11. And then they'll come to the southeast by the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 15. Chance of precipitation tomorrow set at 60%. Tomorrow night, showers likely. Cloudy, a low 52. East-southeast winds at 7 to 14. Those showers will continue at a 50% pace on Saturday with mostly cloudy skies and a high of 60. 40% chance on Saturday night and 46. 50% on Sunday and a high of 61. And then more showers Sunday evening at a low of 47. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
Well, this is the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report for the second day of May. On the phone line with us is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan. How's the weather there?
Cloudy and rainy.
Well, kind of the same.
We're not raining right now, but it's been raining. So we get a shower every half hour or so. It's almost like the summer weather pattern has settled in.
You reach out from all the way there to up here in our part of the world, but maybe you've got a better handle on whether the Delta really got much corn planted or whether it was remained delayed as it was earlier in the year. And I suspect that'll have some impact when we get to that gap time frame, August, early September. What do you see?
Well, I think the Delta has, whether or not the farmers, I haven't really heard, but I do know that the planting prevent date, I think, in many areas in Mississippi is something like April 25th. So they're right up against the edge, because I remember visiting with John Bondurant up at the beef house, and he says they need to get their corn planted by middle part of March, and once you get past April 1, yield potentials really fall off dramatically because of the hotness and the heat that usually is associated with Mississippi. So I don't know how many acres we're going to lose to prevent plant down there or not, but there's no doubt we're losing corn acres, and I think the trade's trying to sort that out here as we look at maybe planting progress coming in Monday afternoon, less than 20%, may even be closer to 12 or 13. I do know there's a lot of corn that has gone into the ground over the last 2-3 days in many areas, but whether or not that shows up in Monday's report remains. But whatever the case is, it's going to be May 6th, and less than 20% of the crop planted really begins to bring home the fact that we're losing corn acres, and we're then on the verge of maybe losing yield potential. I don't know how to quantify that, but that'll be what the jitters will be next week if it doesn't turn dry like some of the extended weather maps are indicating here today.
And so on the fundamental side, when you look at it, acres in the Delta, will they go to soybeans, question mark? And then, of course, you've got acres in the Southwest, which continues to be extraordinarily dry, wheat acres, that is. I don't know whether they would bother to tear those up and try to plant corn or not.
There's talk about 25% maybe of the hard winter wheat crop may be abandoned, and something else may go in there, whether it be sorghum or soybeans or what, but there is talk of some acreage abandonment in the hard red winter wheat area.
All in all, I suppose the fundamental aspects of what crop's going where and when it's going in late and how much of yield damage there might be makes your job tough trying to figure out what's available in the coming fall. Do you have some good milepost or markers of some sort that you try to gauge things with?
Well, in the short run, that's what we're trying to figure out here in the corn and what we're going to end up, in the United States. But when you look at the huge South American crop that's coming out or is out in Brazil and beginning to come out in Argentina, I mean, they look to be export competitors, both corn and soybeans, all the way into next January or February. So South America is almost going to become a year-round supplier of corn and soybeans to the world market. And that is what's got most people bearish in the long run, is that it used to be South America was kind of out of inventory by late summer, and then the North American crop, primarily the U.S., we would have an export market to sell into. Now we're going to be competing with South America inventory all the way into January, the way it looks. So,
now you're talking for corn and or for corn and
corn and soybeans.
Okay,
and that is why the market really hasn't been too panicky yet. Of maybe losing 2 or 3 million acres of corn, maybe losing 1 or 2 bushels yield, whatnot. And that's why the market really hasn't started panicking. But in years past, it really hasn't panicked until you got into about May 20th. But there is no doubt Monday's surge to the upside. From a chartist point of view, I view that as a trend changer to something more in the order of sideways to higher. Now, beans are just barely higher for the week after their losses. We'll have to see what happens tomorrow if they come back and put in a good day. Technically, the market is doing kind of somewhat typical of what it does when it breaks out of a pattern. You usually have a big breakout surge. The market runs for a day or so, and then you have a fallback correction. And I think that's what the Wednesday decline was a fallback correction. You usually fall back to the point of breakout, and then if the market is any good, then it finds support and resumes in the direction of the breakout. Now, in corn's case, we saw that happen today. Corn has got nice, solid closes. We're right up against the weekly highs. We'll see what tomorrow brings. But what's got beans struggling is the large South American crop and the prospect that we could see, a big increase in soybean plantings.
Any drop-off in the export market for soybeans from the United States?
Well, things are slow, but we can't really afford to sell much. we did see some old crop cancellations this morning, and that's going to continue probably, or some of those will be rolled into the new crop. But we had a very strong new crop sales week. Actually, new crop soybean sales are on pace with last year's pace. So that is a strong sign that foreign buyers do want to own U.S. soybeans, because I think we're a much more reliable supplier. We don't have people striking all the time, and we have a very good logistic system, so we can get soybeans to wherever they want us to go, whether it's the Northwest or the Gulf or wherever. So there is interest in owning U.S. soybeans. But again, South America will be a competitor of ours, and that will limit upside potential depending upon what kind of crop we grow this year.
Hey, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's based in Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Hey, there are a couple of ways you can hear Dan again if you'd like. You can always visit our website at willag.org. You can do that on your smartphone, too. There's a different version for the smartphones if you want to go to m.willag.org. Or you can just call this number, 217-333-3434. Now here's Dave with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, the Commerce Department today says that the U.S. trade deficit narrowed for a second month in March as a daily flow of imported crude oil dropped to the lowest level in 17 years. The deficit with China hit a three-year low. The Commerce Department says a trade deficit decreased to $38.8 billion, an 11% drop from February's $43.6 billion. Crude oil imports averaged just 7 million barrels per day. That's the lowest level since March of 1996. Chinese manufacturing growth slowed in April as global demand weakened. HSBC Corporation's Purchasing Manager Index fell to 50.4 from March's 51.6 on a 100-point scale, on which numbers above 50 show an expansion in activity. HSBC says that factory production expanded, but growth was hurt by weaker output and new export orders, which contracted for the first time this year. A new federal report blames a combination of problems for a mysterious and dramatic disappearance of U.S. honeybees since 2006. The factors cited including a parasitic mite, multiple viruses, bacteria, poor nutrition, and pesticides. Experts say they have so many causes that it makes it harder to do something about what's called colony collapse disorder. The disorder has caused as much as one-third of the nation's bees to just disappear over the winter each year since 2006. The report was issued today by USDA and the Environmental Protection Agency. The latest U.S. Drought Monitor map issued today says that rainfall continues to alleviate the drought in eastern parts of the U.S. Farm Belt, but areas further west are still struggling with extreme drought. In the Midwest region, which stretches from Minnesota to Kentucky, 14.1% of the region was in some level of drought, down from 14.9% 1 week ago and 51.4% 3 months ago. Conditions remain worse in the High Plains region, which stretches from the Dakotas to Colorado. The drought monitor showed 85% of the region in some level of drought, down from 86.4% a week ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Our guest tomorrow on Commodity Week, by the way, Tom Grisafi from Indiana Grain Company. Tommy Grisafi on Commodity Week will record at 4:30 on Friday afternoons, posted to willag.org by about 6 o'clock Central Time, USA. Now up next, the introduction of BT corn has controlled many insect pests in the United States, you know that. Among these is the black cutworm. You might not know that, but as you'll hear, not all BT corn is designed the same, and the delay in the corn planting and those weedy fields that you're looking at today might create a problem for a few producers. On a cool but dry afternoon last week, extension entomologist Mike Gray from the University of Illinois wanted to take a drive looking for a specific kind of farm field, one filled with winter annuals, weeds. Why? Well, because the late corn planting will cause a very short interval between the time those weeds will be sprayed and the time the field will be planted. The fact is, the weeds will probably still be alive, but dying when the corn comes up, and that's a problem in the making most farmers are not used to thinking about. If their BT corn variety isn't designed to control the black cutworm, then the weeds will provide the perfect temporary home and feeding ground for the black cutworm and, more importantly, its larvae. The cutworm is actually a moth that migrates northward into the Midwest, says Mike Gray.
There is a striking black dagger on each of those four wings that's readily apparent. So they're a relatively easy moth to identify.
He explains what it looks like for a reason. The short time frame between the weed management and corn planting could mean a sharp increase in cutworm injury to the seedling crop.
The black cutworms, again, once the larvae hatch from eggs, initially they will begin to feed on these weeds. But as weeds are destroyed either through tillage or herbicides, and as corn seedlings begin to emerge, these black cutworm larvae will move off their weed hosts onto these young developing corn plants. Corn plants at the four-leaf stage or below are most susceptible to cutting.
Initially, producers scouting their seedling cornfields will see small pinholes in the leaves. However, right now is the time to take action, says Mike Gray. Look for the weedy field, which will be planted to a BT corn variety that won't control the black cutworm, and install a pheromone trap.
The pheromone trap basically is used to, again, capture the moths. And when we have what is known as a biofix, which would be when you capture 9 or more moths over a 1 or 2 day period, at that point we can begin to accumulate heat units, growing degree days, as they're often referred to, using a base 50 degree Fahrenheit as our threshold. When we accumulate about 300 heat units, that's a good point at which cutting may begin to take place. So when we see about 300 heat units past that biofix, those larvae are probably at the cutting stage, which would be about the fourth larval instar. That's a critical point when producers, and hopefully they're going to get out there even before then, but that's at a point when cutting may begin to occur in those fields.
So, producers with weedy fields to be planted to a corn variety that does not control the black cutworm should install pheromone traps now. Scout those traps regularly, and if 9 moths are captured over a 1 or 2 day period, then the biofix is in and can be used to calculate when cutting may take place. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Time now on this Thursday afternoon during the closing market report to look at the cash grain market. On the phone line with us is Matt Bennett. He's a TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers aren't in the field. Have they been in your office?
Yeah, of course they have. Not much doing. They've been in doing a little bit of spraying here and there, I guess. But everybody's coming in talking just a little bit about hopes that we don't get any big flood here.
other than that, what are they saying about the marketplace?
Well, I think most guys are a little apprehensive to do anything right now, and we're not certainly not really recommending making additional sales until we see just how much rain we get with this rain event and see if we have any follow-up rain. Because if we would have follow-up rain, I think this market would get awfully excited.
Anybody actually been in the fields and tried to plant today?
Nobody that I know of in our immediate area. We've had several guys, like I said, get out there and spray a little bit, but some of them had some issues with some awfully wet soils. So guys are going out with four-wheelers or rangers and pulling small sprayers around and getting around pretty good, actually, though.
Issues with wet soils. That's a kind way of saying they got stuck, isn't it?
Yeah, if it was a little bit wet, they wouldn't be going, but a little muddy, I guess, sometimes that's what stops them.
Yeah, that usually is what stops them. Hey, so when you look at the fundamentals at the marketplace at this time, this is kind of one of those things that's almost as hard to deal with as a drought because it comes on in a unique way, but you really don't have any idea what the yield is going to be at the end of the year.
Right. This is a big-time pendulum swing here. I think to me, more than yield concerns based upon late planting, we really have got to be considerate of what kind of acreage we're looking at losing, because there's no question the farther that we go in here, there's a lot of people here that we eliminate, especially whenever the northern part of the Corn Belt ends up getting a lot of rain, if they do, or snow in some people's cases. There will come a time whenever they can basically no longer feasibly plant corn.
What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, 680, 538 for fall, 1450 for cash beans, and 1182 for fall.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Matt Bennett. He's with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. Back in just a couple minutes when we'll talk with Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather. Pete Levitt is out of the office this afternoon.
It's National Truffles Day. Truffles were known by the ancient Samaritans, Greeks, and Romans, who served black and white truffles as appetizers and in salads. The earliest known surviving documents mentioning truffles in cooking are in 2 9th century manuscripts. By the way, a 3-pound truffle sold in 2007 for $330,000. It was unearthed near Pisa, Italy. On this day in agricultural history in 1883, S.G. Roberts, a member of the Dakota Territorial Council, convinced his fellow representatives to draft and pass a bill that would allow the northern portion of Dakota Territory to create an agricultural college. Today, it is known as North Dakota State University. In 1885, Good Housekeeping magazine began publication. Founded by Clark W. Bryan, the magazine was eventually purchased by Hearst Publishing in 1911. The magazine was a leader in advocating for the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act, which provided federal inspection of meat products and established labeling requirements on a number of drugs. The Meat Inspection Act authorized the Secretary of Agriculture to inspect and condemn any meat product found unfit for human consumption. By the way, the act was partly in response to Uptown Sinclair's The Jungle, a look at the Chicago meatpacking industry. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Time to deal with the weather forecast here on the Closing Market Report. Mike Tenora is with us from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd.
What do you tell me this afternoon about rainfall in our part of the world?
Well, it does get pretty interesting as we go over the next few days. I mean, in the near term, there is a severe thunderstorm warning for western Champaign County and then over to the west into Monticello. So that's something just to watch in the next, say, 30 minutes or so. But other than that, the big picture that we have is that there's a large upper-level system moving toward Illinois and Indiana, and what we're going to see happen here over the next 24 to 36 hours is an uptick in rainfall coverage and amounts. So things are wet right now as far as topsoil goes, and we'll see topsoil moisture continue to increase, unfortunately, over the next few days. So not the best forecast for planting.
Yeah, 0.2 or 0.5 inch would be one thing, but 2 inches would be far different. What do you see for total amounts?
Well, 2 inches sounds about right for the western half of the state. Just as a generalized rainfall forecast, we'd say anywhere from 1 to 2 inches with localized 2.5 inch amounts across Illinois. So there is quite a bit of rain coming up. This all begins, again, essentially right now, but more so later on tonight, tomorrow, and into tomorrow night, and then everything starts to wind down towards Sunday. The only problem we have with Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is that even though we don't see a whole lot of rain out there, this upper-level system will be lingering across the Corn Belt, and what that essentially leads to is a long period of cloudy, cool, and showery weather with highs only in the 60s and lows in the upper 40s to low 50s. So that's going to continue all the way through around Monday or Tuesday next week.
The nation appears to be divided between the haves and the have-nots along an axis that runs from St. Paul through Des Moines and Kansas City and on down towards West Texas. What are the prospects in that western part of the world?
Well, that's where the best conditions will be for planting over the next week. We'll see lots of sunny skies out in the plains from Montana and North Dakota southward all the way through Nebraska, Kansas, and into Texas. So this area will start to see improvements as far as planting prospects go for corn and for spring wheat. So it's interesting that just a week ago we were a little bit worried about spring wheat planting across the Dakotas because of all the deep snowpack. Well, that melted away in a matter of days, and now we have a fairly dry pattern taking place in the plains, at least for the next week. Once we get to around Wednesday, Thursday, we're pretty sure another system is going to move out, and that's going to bring rain back into the plains, including key corn areas, and then potentially right back into the Corn Belt somewhere around Thursday or Friday next week. So This is just a real stormy pattern. We just went through what looks like the second wettest April on record for the region of Illinois, Indiana, Iowa. So all this rain is just continuing to keep producers out of the field, and that's where the problems are right now.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather. He's out of Chicago, Illinois, joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.